Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Lowdown. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Georgia first team coach David Well. David, big welcome back to the show.
Hi, Connor. Thanks for having me back on.
David, I'd say, we were only speaking there off air, but it was probably 2.5 years now. It was probably the summer of 2021 since you made your maiden appearance on the show. What have you been getting up to since?
It's as you know, football's ever changing. So I think when we spoke then, I was more the sporting director side of things. That was where I was back in 21. But I think my passion was always coaching. That's where I first started my career, sort of back in 2003, four, and had some good coaching spells before the sort of director and scouting role. So since then, I was thinking to myself, especially during the COVID period, gives you a long time to reflect. And coaching was always my passion, so it was always something I wanted to go back into. I really enjoyed the sporting director roles and was fortunate enough to give in a couple of opportunities. One at York City as the first team manager, and second with most recent one with Georgia as the assistant coach, which was, both amazing experiences, both very different. But it just sort of reignited my passion back for the coaching, and really happy where I am now.
Amazing, you're the second person in just the last few episodes to come on that were working in a previous sporting director-esque recruitment role, Scott McLaughlin being the other one that said COVID was a huge reckoning time for him to re make him realise actually he fell in love with the game because of the coaching side as well. So that's been absolutely amazing to hear. But how did the move to Georgia come about amidst all of this?
Football can be, even though it's far and wide, where Georgia's based, football is still quite a small world. So during my, I think I was just going into Tottenham as a sort of like a head of recruitment type role. And a game in France, I came across Willy Sagnol, who's the current head coach. He was head coach. He was sorry, technical director at the time of the France Federation, and he was also coach for the under 21s. And we was at a game, just at a game in France. Where I was looking at a couple of players for Tottenham at the time, and we were sitting quite close to each other. Obviously, I recognised who he was. Great career as a player, Bayern Munich, Champions League winner, France international. So I just went over and sort of introduced myself, and we started chatting football. He was a really nice guy, and we got on really well, and we exchanged numbers, and we kept in contact probably throughout last 7 or 8 years. His wife's English as well, so he's come over to England a few times. And I sort of helped that relationship blossom a bit more because we've had some sort of face-to-face meetings. And I think when they knew that once they qualified for the Nations League, through the Nations League into the to have a chance for the playoffs in the Euros, he wanted to strengthen his coaching department and help give that sort of final push, if you like. And we spoke about sort of what my role would look like and how it would help himself and the players, staff, the federation. And it wasn't a long conversation. I agreed to more or less straight away. The chance to work at international level is something that I'd always wanted to do. So, and obviously work with someone who's a top coach and a good guy, and the chance obviously to qualify for the Euros as well was quite appealing. So yeah, it was a very easy decision in the end.
And we were just speaking off air. For those that already didn't know, I haven't seen Georgia play the four games in the last Euros. Over the countless, I would say, last few qualifying campaigns for Euros, Nations League, World Cup, it's been a real discernible style of play. And obviously, Sagnol's gone in and enhanced that. It's been spearheaded by your two main guys, Kvaratskhelia and George McCoutsey. But how big of a factor did the style of play, I suppose, in the broader scheme of things, play in the role of qualifying for the Euros?
Yeah, I think it always has a factor in terms of how you want your teams to play. And I think we always, the philosophy was in place before I got there. Willie and his team did a fantastic job of implementing a sort of very attacking based philosophy with a good defensive structure and, you know, real intensity to the play as well, and look to try and, you know, play with a little bit more freedom, especially in the attacking areas. That was always the intention of, that's always been our game plan. The game plans vary slightly, depends on your position, but we always have that attacking intent, whether that comes on the transition or high press. But that's always our game plan. So once you've got that philosophy embedded within your players, you can set yourself up differently tactically, depending on your position and stuff. But I think when you've got that, it gives a player, especially attacking players, and like you mentioned with Quara and Miko, we got some, you know, we're quite blessed with that, with those front two. You know, they're outstanding front players, so it gives them a little bit more freedom to play. We can play to their strengths a little bit as well, especially once we get in those attacking areas and they're allowed to use their pace and their quality to, you know, try and hurt the opposition. So I think that style of play really helped us, in especially in the qualification phase. It's definitely helped us in the playoffs against Luxembourg and Greece. And yeah, and in the Euros as well. You know, the Euros, as you know, there's no easy teams. You know, they are the best of the best. They're all there on merit through qualification. They weren't in their place. So, and I think from us, we took that attack and intent with that intensity, and we give them the freedom to express themselves. And also the mentality was key for us, Connor, because we wanted to really give them that, how can we put it, that freedom to no fear, because there's no expectations on us. We were sort of one of the lowest ranked teams in the competition in terms of our placing. So obviously the expectations are on France, England, Germany, Spain, the bigger teams. So with that, I think that helped us, especially from the mentality side, from the attacking side, from the tactical side, and really allowed us to implement those that game plan throughout the tournament.
And I mean, you touched upon it there earlier on, obviously qualifying for the Euros, which took place in June, as late as March, gives you a very, very short and brief window to prepare for a tournament of such magnitude. Obviously, with the philosophy and an awful lot of the principles of play really embedded already, what was your workload over those 3 months getting prepared for a tournament of such magnitude, David?
Yeah, it's obviously once you qualify, it's all hands on deck, because like you say, we probably didn't have the luxury of other teams that have qualified automatically back in sort of November time, or even before that, knew their fate. So for us, we had to have some basics in place before, just in case, before the playoffs, in terms of like some logistical stuff, and which we don't know who was going to get in the group until sort of just after that. So I think from us, from the preparation side, we just had to prepare the players best we could in terms of their preparation for on the field, off the field, making sure that during that sort of March period up until qualification, our players stayed healthy, stayed fit, was in constant contact with their clubs. Then once we start to know who we're playing in the Euros, we start to do a lot of analysis work on your position. We start to do a lot of preparation around that. And then the camps beforehand, we had a pre-season. We had a sort of like a mini pre-season to get the players back in Austria before we went to Germany. We had a couple of like good friendly games as well, once against Montenegro, which really helped us. So yeah, there's a lot of planning, a lot of preparation, a lot of detail that goes into it. And I think that really served us well. And I think what helped us as well was when you're away in these camps for a long period of time, was the strength of the players' characters and the mentality of the players. You know, a lot of these players are, if you looked at our squad, there's sort of generational mixes. So you've got the more senior players that played, you know, between 50 and 100 games for Georgia. We've got some of our younger players. But I think what's helped us is these players have come through together through the youth ranks and they played a lot of games. So there's such a good generational mix from So the experienced players lending those experiences to the younger ones, and the younger ones bringing that fresh energy, that impetus, that intensity to it. So, and when you bring all that together, and you've got a real good environment, good culture, I think that allowed us to keep focus for, you know, good periods of time, for because you're away for a long period of time from families, from friends. You're, you know, it's literally work, train, games. So yeah, I think once you've got that, and I think that's the side that probably a lot of international managers and coaches will tell you about, that probably is not seen behind the scenes. But if you get that part right, along with the obvious of your training, I think that can really, you know, that can really ignite the team's passion and fire for, you know, a tournament of that magnitude.
And I would assume a whole host of credit must go to the FA as well, because none of that seems unintentional in terms of having all those generations lined up. And indeed, when you look at the latest talent or latest generation talent coming through, it's absolutely fantastic. But as you said there, it's kind of like a matchbox experience in terms of, I mean, you would have never been subjected to something like that before, six, no. 7 weeks intensive camp and whatnot. And obviously, upon reflection, four really, really memorable games, even as a neutral watching on, from the Turkey game to the draw against the Czech Republic, the obvious victory against Portugal, and then the last 16 game versus Spain. Are there any of those, upon reflection, David, that you really look back and reflect and be like, yeah, that game, that particular moment will be forever etched in my memory?
Yeah, I think the turning point for us was, obviously everyone highlights the Portugal game, and I think, you know, that helped us qualify for the next round, and that was amazing. But I think we're talking about this amongst the coaching staff and stuff, and I think the first game against Turkey, where the first 15 minutes was quite cagey for us, you know, new experience playing teams of, you know, Turkey's a very, very strong team. They got players in top clubs all over Europe. So the first 15 minutes, we was under a lot of pressure. But I think once we relaxed and scored, I think that really, we really started to feel, that was the moment. Once we scored that first goal and we leveled the game, I think that was where we felt we've arrived in the tournament. And that game was probably a game which, looking back, we maybe should have won on chances. It was an open game. We was allowed to, you know, Turkey, because they play quite open, allowed us to play quite open. And there was chances at either end. And I think that's where it gave us the confidence to really kick on and put a solid performance in against a very difficult Czech side. And then we built on that. And then that allowed us to, you know, put in an amazing performance against Portugal.
And I mean, again, just focusing on that Turkey game, that opening game, I remember watching the game here on an afternoon, a summer's afternoon in Chicago, just thinking, listening to this through TV, being like, is there something off here with the sound? Because it just seemed like absolutely bedlam and pandemonium in the stadium. And I think for an awful lot of pundits, on reflection, was their actual game of the tournament, just in terms of how chaotic it was. But for me, if it wasn't already clear and apparent to people, seeing the way the goals were celebrated from either end in that game, just, I think it reinforces the magnitude of what this meant to each of all coaching staffs, each teams, each supporters, because that day in Dortmund, it just looked an absolute masterpiece to be a part of, David.
Yeah, and it was, and you're right, it was electric on the touchlines. It was, and I think because it was the first time, obviously there was a lot of emotions attached to that game. The probably sounds you could hear was, we was probably outnumbered by the Turkish fans, being because there's quite a lot of Turkish population, especially in that area of Germany. So, but the atmosphere and our fans were incredible. You know, it was over 80,000, and we had, you know, over 30 of those, which was mass coming from sort of Georgia that made the trip, was incredible. And I think when you're in an atmosphere like that, and you got the platform like that to play in, I think it can't not inspire you when you're on the pitch and when you're on the touchline. And you do have to control your emotions as well, because you can get run away with it. Obviously, when goals are going in and chances are being created, it was quite an open game, and it was, you know, it was quite an exhausting game as well. But you do have to have that element of control when you're giving information to the player, especially at half time when you get them in for 15 minutes about. You want them to play and you want them to express themselves. You want them to go out and attack, but also, you know, have that work rate and that defensive structure as well, because, you know, we're not exactly the top teams where we can afford to go high too early. We have to play in a very calculated manner, but also when we do get in the attacking halves, we just let the players play, because we got, you know, as you mentioned, we got two really good attacking players that can hurt your position, and especially with our sort of midfield structure behind, and, you know, our wing backs as well, you know, we're very attacking to give us that natural width. So yeah, it's I would say that was probably the opening game was probably, like you say, that from a commentator, we had lots of nice moments where we were getting messages after the game that was a game of the tournament so far, and still to this day people still talk about that game, and I think that was a, you know, a real credit to both teams.
Absolutely fantastic. And if that wasn't enough, I suppose, to capture the imagination of the Georgian public or the wider footballing public, the last group game against Portugal certainly was obviously dubbed the biggest upset in Euros history. You guys, Georgia, ranked 74th in the world against fourth place Portugal. There was one word you mentioned earlier on, I'd like to touch upon it, and that's mentality. Because obviously the mentality to be focused and concentrated over 95 or 100 minutes of a game, which they are nowadays, in your low block, be it in the high press as well, when to go, when not to go, but also the mentality when in possession of the ball to actually cause damage against the opponent. And obviously keeping up to date with all the news and media surrounding the tournament, I thought it was really enlightening that after the group stages, when they were picking their teams at the tournament, two of your guys made Pat Nevins in the BBC, McCoudsey and Kavicha Kavaris-Scaly, would obviously necessitate that you're actually able to get the best out of these players, two top players in the respective leagues in Europe, in the biggest tournament going up against the big boys. But talk us through what the prep was in such a short space of turnaround between the Czech Republic game and the Portugal game, and going into a game where realistically you know you need to win, but getting through to the players' minds that this is going to be a game of four moments and we need to have concrete plan for each of these.
Yeah, I mean, because Georgia itself, the country and stuff like that, they're very, very passionate people. Not just the players and staff, but the whole nation, you can really feel, and you get, and if sometimes that passion can tip into emotion, and obviously emotion can be quite dangerous if it's not fueled in the right direction and channeled. So part of my role in the Georgia setup, as well as the on-field coaching stuff, was because I have a master's in sports psychology, was to put on a couple of presentations and work with groups and players on the mindset, on the preparation before the tournament started. And that was more around sort of, you know, creating history for us. We'd already done that, but, you know, could we go and do it again? Could we raise our levels and go and do that again? And what would that look like for us? We looked at other teams that had done it, like Iceland, Wales, teams like that, that were, you know, not the big nations going into these tournaments that have gone beyond expectations. So we use those as references. And it was just about focus before going in. And then leading up to more the Portugal game, it was more about, we got nothing to lose. Can we just go out and play our game? It's our chance to rewrite history again for our country. It's, you know, but having, so igniting the passions within the players, igniting the emotions, but keeping it controlled and focused. And also, this is our game plan. This is what we're going to do with your positions. And then we looked at how we're going to manage the pressure and the expectations of that as well, as a group, as a coaching team and players. And, you know, I delivered a couple of sort of presentations around that as well. And I think along with that and our, you know, our coaching work and the environment, we didn't want to put too much on the emotional side. We wanted to ignite the players, but to get them boiling, but not enough where they go overboard, but obviously still have an element of control in their play as well. So I think the players going into that game were just razor-focused, razor-sharp. They knew their job at hand. They knew it was going to be incredibly difficult. We went in with a game plan. We executed it really well. We knew that if we got ahead early, which we did, that we would have a real chance, because Portugal would then become strong and our strengths are, you know, we do play well on the counter. So we could maybe hurt them in those areas. And as long as defensively we were well structured and we were focused, it was just a feeling going into the game that we was gonna, not say win because it was against Portugal, but we was gonna have a really good game. And you could feel the energy, you could feel it from the players. And I think these sort of things sometimes go unnoticed when you create this real strong bond. It makes our job as coaches a lot easier to transmit information into the players and help their minds get focused for something like this. So I think that was the main emphasis: real razor sharp focus, but not over boiling too much on your emotions.
That's an interesting one to continue with, because as you spoke about, a huge turning point for you and the coaching staff was the opening goal against Turkey. But, you know, the genie was certainly let out of the hat of beating Portugal, and it's kind of difficult to remain low-key after that qualifying for the round of 16. And obviously, it meant a whole deal to you guys as a coaching staff, the players, the Georgian football public. So in the 4 or 5 days preparing for a game such as the magnitude of Spain, how do you keep those emotions in check?
Yeah, I think what we did well is you have to allow the players, after a game of that magnitude against Portugal, you have to allow the players to have the next day to fully recover and focus. And we, you know, we want the families to come in and we allowed the families to come in and stuff and just let the players relax, you know, switch off, have that day, because there weren't much turnaround. But I think if you need to let the players have that, because you don't want them too tight where they're just going in game after game after game. They're human beings at the end of the day. So I think the first day after that was a family day for everyone, staff, players, just to relax a little bit, and then a very light training session in the evening. And then literally sort of, because we didn't have much of a turnaround, I think it was 4 or 5 days, not long. And then literally that 4 days after that was, from the coaching staff, it was, okay, we knew Spain from the qualification phase, so we knew exactly their strengths and weaknesses. So there was no real surprise in terms of how they was going to play. I mean, they were a phenomenal side. They got so much quality running throughout the team. It's very, very difficult when you're analysing a team like that to pick apart certain strengths and weaknesses, because they got so many strengths. But we set up pretty similar to the Portugal game, because in terms of, we wanted to play on the transition, we wanted to play on the counter, we didn't want to leave ourselves too exposed. So we wanted defensively to be very well organised and very well structured. That was our first base. And then second one was when we had possession, to try and be positive going forward with it, to try and play forward quickly. We felt there was some, you know, some space in the wide areas where we scored our first goal, where they commit their fullbacks pretty forward. So we thought that might be an area we could exploit. So I think it was just key points, rather than, because we knew that we felt that we could exploit, and if we had those moments in the game that we could try and maybe use those, and we did, and we managed to get the goal. But in the end, Spain were far too strong, especially when it got to about the 60th, 70th minute. You could see our players, we give so much, and in the end their sort of quality shine through. But preparation was, I would say, pretty similar to Portugal in terms of how we approached that game. Just again, trying to get the players laser focused, try and shut out as much as emotion as we can, as much as the outside noise, just to concentrate on us, concentrate on our performance. And also, again, letting them have that freedom, because there was nothing to lose for us going into the second round against Spain. You know, we wasn't expected to win. So again, it was, when we do have the ball, let's play, because, you know, we're not going to, if we sit back the entire game, you know, we're not going to, you know, what's that going to prove, you know, from us? You know, it proves that we might concede less, but we're not going to score, because Spain are, you know, the masters at keeping possession. So it was a case for us, right, okay, defensively, yes, this is us, but attacking-wise, we still have to play. and let's try and be brave, let's try and be positive, let's try and take risk, and let the players, we reminded them as well, remember when you was, you know, when you was young, when you was playing with your friends, when you was playing on the streets, you know, have that joy when you play, have that excitement, you know. So the second round of the Euros, this is your chance, this is your moment, just play.
It's an interesting one to touch upon in terms of the coaching staff, David. I'd love to hear more in terms of the considerations tactically, especially from a defensive point of view, because if you try and remain compact against an opponent such as Spain, then the two guys out wide, Nico and Lamine Yamal, are going to kill you. But if you try and cover all the spaces, obviously the ball players they have, such as Rodri, Fabian Ruiz, Olmo, Pedri, who was starting at the time, will also threaten. I mean, so yeah. What's the trade-off there? What's the compromise that you guys came to?
Yeah, I think it was just to try and restrict the spaces, especially centrally, because if you look at the way Spain played, they had Morata as the focal point, number nine, but he would often come off because we played with sort of a 3-5-2, so he would come off, and then their two number eights, let's say Fabian Ruiz, Pedri, would drift into those between the lines. So again, we tried to try and cover those spaces because that's one key point that they do very, very well, and it's so difficult to defend, but obviously we tried our best to do that. And then also shift across when Yamal or Nico Williams are in possession and try and double up a little bit, because you're talking about two world-class wingers. Yamal, when he's 16, 17 years of age, was incredible. We knew all about them from when we played them before previously, so we knew that they were devastating 1v1, and we couldn't allow that too much. And in the end, obviously their quality shined through, but those were the two ones, sort of main focal points, because I think, like you say, if you try and defend everywhere, you're going to leave yourself short somewhere, and maybe, you know, not just one spot but two or three. So I think you just have to, as a coaching group, you have to analyze which is their main attacking threats. You look at the data, you look at the way they play, you watch many games on them, and we try and implement a structure around from a defensive point of view of how can we be solid and compact against their, what we thought from our point of view, their two key areas where they cause a lot of damage to teams, which they did, you know, against previous opposition. So, and then when we had possession, was try and go forward quickly, not to take too many touches, because not only are they an outstanding team, Spain, in possession, you can actually hear them on the sidelines as well. Everything from their coaches is press, 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 and they're like hunters on the ball. So they real, you know, they, you can't, you, as soon as you have the ball, you have to be really, really precise in terms of your movements forwards. Because again, they give you, I think when we was talking to him after, they give you, he said our mentality is to sort of 2-3 seconds. As soon as they lose the ball, we want it back. You know, 2-3-4 seconds. That's their target. So they swarm you like a, what, you know, all over you. So as soon as you lose possession, it's 3-4 players around you straight away. And they do it so impressively. So I think those were the main sort of key things as well, the two key points sort of defensively, and then going forward to try and play forward quickly to not allow them to set up in a press quick to get us offset as well. So we tried our best at it, and we had, I think the first half we played really well. We did well in the first half, and you know, and I think if we would have, maybe the goal from Rodri just before half time was a sucker punch, because it was right on the verge of half time. If we could have gone in 1-0, maybe, not saying we would have won by any means, but maybe we could have held on a little bit more and made the game a little bit more interesting. But I think from the 70th minute there, it was just too much. They just had too much quality for us in the end.
And I mean, ultimately, zooming out now and reflecting back on yourself, David, and your own role within this, I mean, you came on the podcast last time, you spoke eloquently about your time at Tottenham, Southampton, work alongside esteemed professionals such as Maurizio Pochettino and whatnot. And obviously, prior to this, we've achieved an awful lot in the game. I mean, amidst all the homecoming there to Tbilisi and back in Surrey, where you reside now, I mean, when you sit down, pause and reflect, where does this achievement, I suppose, rank in the upper echelons in terms of what you've done in your career today?
Yeah, it's one of the highest, I think, for me. It's definitely one of the highest, because sometimes it felt like a movie moment in a way, when you achieve something like this, when you're not expected to qualify for one, and then when you get to the tournament, go beyond expectations, even our own, and get to the second round and play the best team in the tournament. I think, and then seeing when we went back to Tbilisi after the tournament finished for a couple of days, you know, with our fans, to celebrate with our fans in Tbilisi Square and going on the bus and the parade and, you know, meeting the Prime Minister. And, you know, it was incredible. You know, the fans were in tears with emotion. And when you see that, you know, it makes you realize that, wow, what an achievement this is. Because when you're in the Euro, sometimes you get caught up in the mist. You're so concentrated on the games and on the tournament and preparation. Once the tournament starts, there's 3-4 days to every game turnaround, so you don't really get much chance to sort of take it in. But it's when you come out, and once we got to Tbilisi, it was like, wow, this is, you know, we've, as a team, a coaching team, players, staff, federation, we've changed the legacy of the country now. You know, we're history makers. And yeah, I think it'd be hard pressed to achieve something like that again in my career, I think.
But I mean, hopefully we can get you on for round three and maybe welcome you over here to the US in 2026 for the World Cup. But big thank you for coming on today and sharing some of those experiences, involving us in them too, because it's brilliant to recount some of those historic moments.
Great, thanks for having me on, mate.